Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We heard the heartbreaking conflicts of a young Indian American woman thinking about her identity in yesterday's program after a brutal shooting in her community last week.
I go to school, I go to public school, and I'm very American in that sense. But I also come home to an Indian house, and I'm bilingual. I appreciate the culture. I don't have prejudice against anyone.
Young Janiya Chakraborty's voice conveys the sense of young people from South Asia feeling the pressure of living in two worlds in today's complex America. One of the movies up for an Academy Award this week, Lion, addressed this theme directly. Actress Manita Gandhi has created a piece of powerful theater by taking audiences on her own journey to find a voice, an identity, as both an American and an Indian. In her one-woman show, Motherland, it's about a return to India to retrace her father's steps from her family home, clutching her father's old suitcase. In the course of her journey, she was sexually assaulted and escaped terrified in the India she thought would happily welcome her back. Motherland has been a way for Manita to explore gender and race assumptions in two cultures at once. It's a story told in brutal headlines such as the 2012 Delhi gang rape and murder of 23-year-old Jyoti Singh on her way home from a movie. Manita says her life echoes the horror of the Singh case portrayed in India's Daughter, a PBS documentary.
I decided to file a complaint, and I was put in a room with 10 men in a room at a temple, including the doctor, the man who had assaulted me, and nobody in that room believed me. And when he finally admitted what he did, he just said, fine, everything she said is true, and there was no sense of remorse. And I remember that hitting me in the gut because they just wanted me to get out of there.
Can you describe the epiphany you had yourself when you really decided that you weren't going to allow the Indian government or anyone to suppress the discussion of sexual violence?
Sure. So I just started writing my play, and I was in the first table read, and I hadn't obviously known about the assault that had happened in India in 2012, and I knew that this documentary was coming out. And the week of the table read of my play, the Indian government banned India's Daughter from being shown in India because they thought it would defame India. And we were sitting around the table reading my play, which at that time was just a series of stories about my trip to India in 2009, and I was skimming over the assault. And I just had such a visceral reaction to the Indian government banning that documentary that even though I had healed from my own experience, I realized that there was some part of me that felt like I shouldn't talk about being a survivor of an assault, that it would bring some level of shame upon my family or myself. And I didn't understand why that existed in myself. And I realized at that point, if it was something that I expected the world and society to give voice to and to not give shame to, that I needed to do that for myself. And so that's when I decided to do some rewrites, and I wrote about the assault in detail. And I think it's actually been a very important part of my play. I don't feel that my play is about the assault. I think it's a plot point in the play, just the same way I think it's a plot point for many people who go through something like that in their life. You're going on with your life, you're trying to figure out all of these other things, and then all of a sudden something like that happens. And I think what it did for me is it taught me how I can have a voice. It gave me my voice in a strange way.
You talk about being comfortable in your own skin, yet on stage, you are beyond naked, it seems to me, at certain points. How does that feel?
I've never been more terrified in my life as an artist than doing this show. And I always think that means I'm doing something right. But it is. It's scary because I'm sharing my life and my family's life and the decisions I've made in my life for better or for worse. And particularly the time of the assault, my body gets really tense right before I get into that scene. And the reason that I think I'm able to do it is because I've survived it. And I know from doing the play now, it's helping so many people. And so knowing that you're using your art as activism can push you through it. And it lets you be naked because it allows other people to be naked too.
Can you share with us what happened in the assault? I mean, the play does that and your art does that. But I think we need to know a few details.
Sure. So I had gone to India in 2009 for my brother Milan's wedding. He was getting an arranged marriage. I was having a beautiful time. I felt very spiritually open. I was in a place with not a lot of electricity. I would wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning, go to yoga, do a lot of Ayurvedic treatments, pray and meditate. And there was a doctor who was running the facility with his wife, who was the other doctor there. And on my fourth night there, which was a Saturday night, and I think it's important to note that Sunday morning was a day off, so a lot of people were gone from the facility. He came to my room at around 10 or 11 at night and knocked on my door, and I opened the door even though I had a gut feeling that told me not to. And I had had some knee injuries and back injuries from a show I had done that I was working on healing. And in the morning, he generally checked on me with his assistant, but he just kept asking me, you know, how's your back and knees? How are your back and knees? Let me check on them. And I kept saying no. And then I just felt like I was being rude. And I know that sounds ridiculous, because every time I tell this story, I say, wow, I let him in because I felt rude. And that is the biggest thing that has bothered me. So I let him into my room and I lay down on the bed, and then he locked the door to the room. And it wasn't until he was on top of me that I could really smell the alcohol. So he was drunk and I was terrified. And I knew in my mind that my passport and my keys and my phone were locked in a safe, like you do when you're in India, and that he was much bigger than me. And there was a steel door that he had locked the room with, and that there was no way for me to physically get out from underneath him. And so, you know, he started taking off my clothes. I tried to resist as much as I could. And while all of this was happening, my mind was just going very fast. How can I get out of this? How can I assess things? And I put it in the play, and I'm not sure if it reads the way that it was in the moment, but there was a copy of Eat, Pray, Love that I had brought with me to India. And I kept staring at the binding of that book because it was the thing that I could see from the bed where I was at. And I just remember thinking, that's going to be the last thing I see. I'm going to die here. And finally, when I was naked, I'm trying not to be too graphic, but his hands had been inside me, and he knew that I was on my period because he's my doctor and I had seen him that morning. The way that I got out of it was I told him that my flow was heavy and I needed to use the bathroom. And he said, that's okay. It doesn't bother me. And I said, no, my flow is heavy. And I tried to play coy, and he got off from me. He got, you know, he...
Manita, you don't have to make excuses. This tactic, this is trying to save yourself.
I guess I just,
so degrading.
I'm sorry, I sometimes think I don't get emotional about it because I've talked about it so much. But, you know, I got him off for me, and then he grabbed my nightgown, and I said I was cold, and he wouldn't give me my nightgown back. And then I smiled at him, and I got my nightgown back, and I walked to the bathroom, and it was a really eerie walk. I walked towards the bathroom really slowly, and I was naked, and I was bleeding, and he was just watching me. And I got to the bathroom, and then when I got to the bathroom, I locked that door to the bathroom, and there wasn't plumbing there, so I was pouring water into a bucket to sound like I was peeing while I got dressed with my other hand, trying to figure out what to do. And then I knew that I couldn't jump up on the small water bins in the bathroom and get out the window because I was in the middle of nowhere in India and I would be in danger in a nightgown. So I thought, okay, I can either lock myself in this bathroom all night until someone comes, or I can try to get him out of my room. So once I was dressed, there's a line in my play where I say my nightgown feels like steel armor, because that's what it felt like, this thin cotton nightgown. And I put it on, and I opened the bathroom door, and I held onto the bathroom door with one hand, and I told him very slowly in English, I'm uncomfortable, you need to go, please stop. And he looked at me in disbelief, and he was so confused. And I said it again, and finally he said, are you showing me the door? And I said, yes. And he left, and I bolted towards the door, locked it, and then I got into the safe, and I called my parents, which was an awful feeling. And my brother, who was being driven to the airport to leave India, I said, you know, please give Dad the phone. I'm in trouble. don't tell them the details, but the doctor tried to hurt me. And this is really amazing because my father got on the phone and I was in a place where I couldn't talk very loud. The doctor understands every language that I speak, and I didn't know if he was outside the window of my room. And my dad just said, "Are you not safe?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Okay, I can take a sleeper train and be there in the morning." And I was quiet, and he said, "You need to get out of there now." And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I'll call the doctor." And I was quiet. And in that moment, I don't know how, my dad understood. And he said, "It's the doctor." And I said, "Yes." And he just, in a split second, said, "Okay, I'm going to call your cousin who you haven't met. And I'm going to say that your grandfather," my grandfather was already passed, but he said, "I'm going to say your grandfather has passed and your cousin's going to pick you up." And I said, "Okay." And we got off the phone, and there was a boy who I had met at the facility who was younger than I, who was there for weight loss. And we used to trick the watchman of the of the facility by throwing food at the stray dogs, and we distract the watchman. We'd run out into town, and because he was there for weight loss, he would get fruit from the fruit vendor. And because I wanted to go to the internet cafe, I'd go to the internet cafe. And he had gone drinking with the doctor that night, and he had told me that he was going to bring me a big bag of fruit. So right after I got off the phone with my dad, there was a knock on the door. And it was that boy. And I didn't know if he was in cahoots with the doctor, but I opened the door, and he was just standing there with this big bag of fruit and so confused. And he helped me. This stranger helped me so much. He stayed in the room with me. The doctor called him, tried to get him out of my room. He stayed with me until my cousin came. And then I got on my cousin's scooter, and my cousin actually thought, because he was a second cousin who I'm not close to, he actually thought my grandfather had passed away. And I got to my cousin's place, and in the morning, my dad was there, and I said I wanted to file a complaint. And my father said, "No way, this is India." And I have never felt this way before, but I have never been so ready to die for something in my life. I knew that I couldn't leave India without doing something about this.
There's a moment, and it's part of the play, and you're on the phone. Your father understands that you're in danger. Your father understands that you can't talk about the danger that you're in, or you might be in more danger. He senses that. He figures out what to do, and he saves you. What did that teach you about what a father knows about a daughter? And in all of the experience that's happened since, your writing of the play, you're confronting him, you're talking with him, interviewing him, what has he, in addition, learned about what it means to be a father?
You know, my dad's biggest fear is something happening to any of his children. And for some reason, it's particularly me. And in that moment, we've always had that love, but in that moment in India where he was on the phone, he just knew. I think he has learned flexibility. I think that's the big thing, because he didn't want me to file a complaint in India. He was worried that we were going to get killed. And he knew how important it was to me, because I really fought for that, that he let that go, because he knew that I needed that. You know, when I told him I wanted to write about this in the play, he said, "Oh, it's not the Coming to America story," because I had been interviewing him and he thought that's what it was about. And I said, "No." And he said, "Are you going to write about what happened in Gujarat?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I don't think you should do that." And I sent him an article for Mother Jones about these women that were protesting the ban on the documentary. And he understood it. And I think he's just learned a lot of flexibility. And I have seen him have a lot of pride about it, that we are able to help other women.
He once said, "You hated India." Was he right? And have you changed?
Yes. So I have always had a deep love for my culture and for India. And when the assault happened, I struggled. When I got home after the assault and I was finally showered and it was 48 hours later in Mumbai when I was just with my parents in a flat alone in India, I lost it. I said a lot of terrible things. I said that I hated India, that I thought that the country was dirty. I said that I never wanted to come back. And I said those things, and in the moment, I meant them. And I think it's because it comes back to that idea of pluralism, that I had assigned this doctor, this man who had violated me, to represent India. And it wasn't until I had healed that I discovered that. And truly, it wasn't until I had written the play that I discovered how there was a certain part of me that had taken that little bit of pain that I was still holding on to and assigning it to a whole culture and a whole country. And I was finally able to let go of that because I was like those blind men. I was only looking at this tail of the elephant. I was only seeing this man who had hurt me. When there's, that's why in my play, what I really hope the audience sees, and I think they do, is there's so much beauty in India and Indian culture. And there's a lot of characters in my play that are real people in my life that are Indian or are Indian American that are so kind and generous and have struggled with me to help me become the empowered woman that I am.
Manita Gandhi, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Manita Gandhi is an actress and playwright. She will be performing her one-woman show, Motherland, across the country. Her next stop is in Portland, Oregon, at the AGE Symposium on March 4th and 5th. For more dates, visit thetakeaway.org.